Welcome to Outlandish Voices, the podcast. I'm your host, Laura Gooden. Today's story is The Teeth of Moloch, written and read by Houston Dunleavy.
There's something about a campfire that awakens the past. Stories are remembered, songs are sung, memories, either our own or another's, are shared. Then there are more stories. For what are stories but a way to connect our memories with everyone else's? And it has always been so. The campfires of the place I was born, or those of my ancestors in Ireland, both produced the same things. Sadness, laughter, songs, nostalgia, rapt attention to the sounds of the night, and the sort of coffee that would either start or stop your heart, depending on how dead you were when you drank it. I know about those home campfires from the long, cold nights I've spent out on the trails with my father. We could be out riding for days, fixing fences, finding sick cattle or lost hikers. Sure, we could have used motorcycles, but your horse is quiet and needs you. Now here I was with my father's grandfather, camping in a wetter place which seemed to have a smaller sky by day and the sort of grass my dad's cattle would have wept over. Yet I still found myself in a dark, closed world lit only by bare flames and being soothed by a voice that was different yet familiar.
"Aye, we used to come up here, your da and me, when he was a wee'un,"
my great-grandfather, whom I knew as Grandpa, said, almost to himself. I'd met him only 2 days ago, but I'd already worked out that he talked to me as if I were inside his head. I'd listened to what remained of my grandfather's Ulster burr all my life, but this was a pure dose of it. Hearing it delivered as if in confidence was a challenge to comprehension.
"He loved it right enough," Grandpa went on. "The owls scared him, mind ye."
A little smile played on his face. "They still do," I murmured. "We camped a few weeks ago and Dad spooked himself and the horse he was brushing down for the night. He nearly jumped out of his skin when he heard an owl hoot and he was too scared to go and get his horse, so he made me go chasing after it." The flames flickered their light around the creases in Grandpa's eyes.
"Aye, sounds like him right enough. There was one night out here when it was really freezing and there was just the pair of us. He was huddled up so close to the fire he thought he was going to climb in."
Grandpa gave a little chuckle. In my mind I saw the little boy huddled close to the fire, his front half burning up while his back was cold as ice, scared to turn round and have the cold bite his face. Now his grandfather's face, wrinkled with a care I had not seen before, stared into the middle distance. Lost in memory.
"We came out here one February night after a big snowstorm. It was white as white and that cowl. Your feet would be like lumps of ice in your boots and the wind would have cut corn. Your da was all excited for about an hour. Then he got cowl and couldn't sit close enough to the fire. He kept asking for a hot mug of tea and when I finally reached one to him he nearly burnt his hands off when he grabbed it."
I can imagine the sting in the boy's ice-cold hands as they grasped the hot tin mug. I nearly felt the pain of it myself.
"Then a barn owl screeched and he nearly died with fright."
The old man got very serious very suddenly. "You can't hear them much now. They think there's only 100 left in the whole of Northern Ireland." I wanted to tell him I'd just heard one, because I just had. A drawn-out, rasping screech that sounded alien, yet so comforting. I wanted to take away the longing and pain that were etched into Grandpa's features, yet what could I say that wouldn't sound fatuous or a lie?
"There never was that many, you know,"
he said, if anything, even more softly.
"It's just like us. One boy every generation, and that's all we get to carry on."
His head turned to stare straight at me instead of the fire. His body remained still.
"There's just you, Pat. You're all we have, just like your da, and his da, and me."
There was only his face for me at that moment, and the sound of another long, painful cry somewhere in the distance. This didn't sound like the first one.
"What was that?"
I breathed. It was so hard to speak. An old fear gripped me. It rose from my guts into my chest, paused only briefly, then gripped my throat and paralyzed my neck muscles. Now I couldn't look away from Grandpa's huge, dark eyes as he stared at me over his left shoulder. He seemed not to have heard me. He was lost in his explanation.
They don't live all that long, you see. But we do. We carry them with us wherever we go.
The screeching was coming closer and was all around me. I couldn't move. I was caught in a vice. Cruel, sharp claws seemed to catch me in the small of my back.
Yours is here now, said Grandpa simply.
As I watched his face, the lines of pain began to darken and fall away from the center toward the edge of his cheeks. They framed his face now, a white and staring face with soft brown edgings and those midnight black eyes. His nose grew sharp and pointed toward the ground. It completely hid his mouth, but I could still hear his voice.
They love us because we carry them after their brief lives end. But there's too few of us, Pat, far too few. Only 4 boys in 4 generations. There's only been 4 to carry on the ancient ways, and 2 of them don't even live here any more. Only 4 caretakers, Pat. Aye, that's what we are, son. Caretakers who keep souls from the jaws of Moloch and his fire. But there's only me now. And there's been that many to let through the Ulster Gate. All those lives cut short by the bombs and bullets. And we have to let them all in and let their families know where they are. There's so many we have to comfort, Pat. And we get fewer and fewer as the years go by. There's so many I can't see from the teeth of Moloch. And I watch them being devoured in his terrible, fiery jaws.
He paused and allowed a tear to roll off his round, pale face before he continued.
Och, sure, the wildlife boys are building nest boxes and trying their best to help me along. But the truth is, Pat, we nearly all leave this island too early. Your da went, and his da when he was too young to know anything. And me son didn't he want anything to do with it anyway. I brought your da out here when he was a wee'un because I thought I could help him along, but he was far too young. He listened to the flames, knew the owls.
What do you mean? I forced out. What about the flames? What are they? Then I began to hear the crackling of the fire growing into the sounds of laughter and temptation. Whispers and giggles sought me out, inviting me in. Screams and demands for tribute, wild voices singing songs of sacrifice and terror, a frenzy of whirling black thoughts took hold of my mind. The screams were so terrifying, so seductive. I wanted to feel the thrill of the kill and taste bloodied, newly slain flesh on my tongue. I wanted to be feared, to rise like vengeance from the fire and rain down terror and panic on all who stood in my way. I could see the choice I needed to make. I could throw myself into this world of pain and hatred and revel in the power of dealing out death and pain to all who feared it. Or I could just turn my back and walk away untouched. I could shut these voices out. Through disgust and fear, I could ignore the power and darkness that could be mine to command. That was all I faced. Until another thought came. I could fight this darkness and sorrow. I could starve it. I could deny it the one thing it wanted most, the pain and suffering of my fellow creatures. I had the power to do this. I didn't know whence it came, but I had it. I could feel it growing in my chest, and I loved it even more than the thought of all the fury and power I could unleash if I joined with the fire. And I knew I could never live with myself if I walked away from this, the greatest battle in the world. A battle that never ended and consumed all of those who joined it. My choice was clear, and as my mind began to focus on the sheer horror of my enemy, the flame subsided and the burning embers became a pair of coal-black eyes. Then came Grandpa's voice over those I'd heard in the flames.
So you're with me then, Pat. Moloch's boy's a hard man, and he's no very nice himself. It's them we have to fight, my lovely boy.
It was Grandpa talking, I was sure, but I didn't recognize his face anymore. It was the shape of a giant white heart. His eyes seemed to bore into me, and my back was now as ramrod straight as his.
I heard the voices, Grandpa, I said through lips that were hard and didn't move. I'm with you. Your son and my father couldn't make the choice we've made, but I'm with you until the end of time, Grandpa. My voice sounded loud and clear in my mind, but the air only buckled under my screech. I was ecstatic with my triumph, and this time I cried out so loudly that the grass, the trees, and the rocks rang with delight. I felt the thrill of temptation, then the relief of deliverance. As my chest seemed to grow out from me and my muscles expanded, I raised my voice and knew it was full of power and terrifying wholeness. Now I can bring deliverance to souls. The teeth of Moloch will be snapping at nothing but air. His stomach will be empty. He will cry with the pain of his hunger. Grandpa spoke more softly, but with greater authority.
Come, my lovely child. You have made the choice that our family couldn't make for 100 years.
He spread his wings and looked up into the sky.
It's time to fly.
That was The Teeth of Moloch, written and read by Houston Dunleavy. Find out more about Houston at www.australiancomposers.com.au. Thanks for listening to Outlandish Voices, the podcast, produced by Laura Gooden, original music by Houston Dunleavy. Find us on Facebook. Search on Outlandish Voices, the podcast. See you next time.